Welcome to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities,
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
You are listening to Resettled Radio, brought to you by ARCC. In the studio with me is Aban, the General Manager of the Resettled Community Coalition. And he will be reflecting on two things. One, on Waiaki Highland, we have the histories that were played in the Waiaki Island, and this is a transfer from Waiaki Island to Maritime Museum. This is in collaboration with other partners. So Aban will be reflecting. So Aban, welcome.
Thank you, Glock.
So you may tell a little bit about what has been going on in Waiaki, and then we'll go deep into Maritime Museum.
Thank you for the opportunity. Has been a while, and always it's a pleasure for me to be back to Resettled Radio. In regard to what has been done in Waiaki Island, you might remember we have an international exhibition in Waiaki Island, which is ARCC has been part of, a sculpture of the Gulf exhibition. We have a partnership between ARCC and Tiffany Sings, and it's about Beyond Refuge, a storybook of resettlement in Auckland. What we really trying to bring to the light of the storybook is that we're trying to introduce ourselves as a newcomers and resettled community to a wider New Zealand audience. As you are aware, when we publish our book on ARCC 10-year anniversary, in intention that we will be translating the or transcript the stories to audio, mm-hmm. where other people can also observe that space. The unique part of this, we thought to ourselves. We tell our stories ourselves, we're writing ourselves, but in terms of integration, we thought to make sure that we bring the voice of New Zealand in mm-hmm. terms of the accent. So we've been really pleased to reach out and find generous New Zealanders who offer their time, their voice, and they read out their stories, and which is very positive outcome in Waiaki Island when we displayed that there, and the feedback was really overwhelming, and for ARCC and Tiffany as well. We're pleased in terms of the outcome of the exhibition there. We understand that just by telling those stories, we thought as well, it's not just enough for the audience finishing by Waiaki Island, but we have another opportunity which has come up through Maritime Museum.
And before, maybe I can cut you short, and before you go to the Maritime Museum, maybe I would stress a point that when we went there, we did not know what was happening. We did not know those who involved. We did not see them, but we know that some who involved in the story is putting them, you know, from the script to the audio.
Yeah.
And we did not know who did that. So when we went there to Waiaki Highland, we found this guy in a ferry, and you just said this must be one of the readers who put the things into the audio by recognizing the voice. it was really, really, really good, and he did not know us too, that we were part of the story. And then we went to the ferry crossing to Waiaki Island, and then things, you know, just blew up. It was like emotional. Even those who have their stories read out, they say it was like somebody else.
Yeah, you know? I think I don't know how I can put it, but the person we met, which is Craig, is the one who wrote read my story out.
Yeah.
But when I went to the ferry, we are going to Waiki. When we greet him, I recognized the voice, but I didn't know
that was
where this voice I really recognized. And then afterward, he asked me a question, and I thought, oh, okay, here the connection is starting now.
Yeah.
And then when we reached to Waiki Island, and Tiffany told me that, oh, this is the guy who wrote your story out, I say, I can see myself in it.
Yeah.
And afterward, we really connect, and has been a very, very emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
And very positive connection in that. After when we went to the place where the boat and the audio coming through the boat, mm-hmm. many of those stories has been read out. We have two or three of them when was asked to visit the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback from both of them is really overwhelming. One of them is that he went there and he listened to his own story and he started just cheering, and he said, "That is not my story."
Yeah, yeah,
and
that's not my story. That was
really touching. And also the other one is a young lady, when she hearing our stories, she's stuck. Even she can't move further to go to other board to hear the story. She said, I can't recognize this is my story.
Yeah.
It's really, and I didn't know what ARCC trying to bring to the light, but now I can understand what you were been talking about a long time ago. Or
sure.
When you come to me and you approach me by taking my stories, I don't have any idea what kind this story is going to be. But
now
when you explain more and you explain more, and then when it been transcribed to audio, now I get it, what you were been talking about and what you were saying. You know, when you don't know something, you don't know. But now I'm getting the idea of ARCC expressing their stories to New Zealand wider, where they're going to be really listening to this.
Yeah.
And when I told her, I said, look, the idea behind this, if we want to be part of this society, it's important for us as a newcomers and resettled community to introduce ourselves to our new country in a positive way where they can understand us.
Mm.
And that's what we're looking for. So that has given me
a different impression. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Before we go there, even I met Frankie.
Mm.
I had a chat with him in the Waiaki Island. I said, hey, Frankie, I know you are part of this audio, and you are a great guy. So tell me in your own way how, because you have never met the guy whom you read his story. You say, no, I have never met him. I've never seen his face. And then I asked him, how do you feel about the story before you saw the guy? He said it was very emotional to me because I read it in the text first, and then it was so overwhelming. That's what he said, because the guy went through a lot of stuff, even in Syria. Even, you know, it's a long process. And then I asked him, and how? When did you see the guy? When did you see the guy? He said, I saw him just a few minutes ago. I said, how did it feel like? He said, I know no words to express that, because it was emotional both sides. It's like I just read the history, and then I have no idea that I will see the guy. And yeah, man. And another Jackie, the one who read the other history for another storyteller. And then Jackie was telling me this young guy from Congo. He said, the story is so amazing, I think I need to see the guy. I say, if you look behind you, the one on your right is him. Say, what? Yeah, that's him. So, oh my God. You know, it was very interactive, emotional, and, you know, it brings a lot into light.
I think what is confirmed to me that the work wishes we are trying to bring to our community awareness. The feedback from the people who were there, one of the journalists, which is she live in Waiki Island, and She came and interviewed me and she said, "Aban, can you tell me in your own words where this idea come from and how do you vision this?" And I said, "Sometimes it's important for us to take a risk and try to do different things where the people can see it and recognize it." And I told her, and I said, "It's not an easy step for me to be part of what I'm trying to contribute to a lovely Aotearoa, New Zealand." And she said, "You just go to the point and tell me."
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay. I've been working in the resettlement sector for many years, and what I can see is there is a lot miss of the pieces which is need to be put together." And she asked me, "What kind of the pieces you're talking about? And I said, "Our journey has arrived already. We are here in New Zealand. The refugees status has already is done. We become a New Zealand citizen and permanent resident." And what is matter to me is that the people refer us to our background, and that is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And why?
Because it's like they call you with what you are not.
Yes. Yeah. And I said, I try to highlight the reality of what it means being a refugee. And for us coming to this country, it's not a choice for us to come to this country, but the choice of UNHCR, the legal representative to us, to be referred to New Zealand, where we can find a refuge, which is the safety. So after we arrive here, we understand ourselves more than anyone else. And what I am trying to bring to the attention to people who don't know us is that I will introduce myself more than anyone else to come and introduce me, because this is the way how the basic human values look like.
Yeah, maybe before you go into that, maybe there will be a listener who will be like asking, "Hey, these people choose to be in New Zealand, how the process is start?" Because a lot of them, they do not know. They just say people from refugee background choose to be in New Zealand and then they come here. But the process back there is different. People don't choose to be in New Zealand, but the UNHCR is the one designating the based on the history you have from where you live as a refugee. And then if your history fits into New Zealand, and then New Zealand will come and look for people. Maybe is it the way it worked when you came? Maybe you can share a little bit on
that. To share that, I think it's an opportunity as well to highlight this over and over again. To be a refugee, I think it's important for each and everyone to apply to UNHCR to have a legal status, because being a refugee is not because you are just you settle in a refugee camp, said. But I can't say refugee camp, because many of people who live there, they're not getting refugee status in first place. And they call it refugee camp. And I argue that that is not a refugee camp.
Yeah.
It might be a refuge camp where the people, they have safety to be protected.
Yeah.
So for you to be a refugee,
because you have to be recognized.
You need to be recognized legally.
Yeah.
You need to be recognized legally by UNHCR.
Yeah.
And when I mean legally, you need to apply and you need to have applications according to your situation. And then
they look into your case.
UNHCR local office in the country which is you are seeking your asylum, the second country. Obviously, because you can't seek asylum while you are in your own country.
Otherwise, you will be displaced, person. Yeah.
The first step is that you need to apply for legal status, which is you will have application, and that will be assessed by legal people within UNHCR local offices.
Yeah.
For example, I give my my process as an example for people to get it just easy to understand. When I were in Syria, I applied for a refugee status, which took me 5 years.
Yeah.
Through the process, my application has been declined the first time, and I did appeal, been a decline, and again and again and again. Yeah. So what this means is that being a refugee is not something you can just be and pick up. Although you've been fleeing your country was a danger, they will not recognize you as a refugee. You need to go through a legal process. And that legal process determines your ability to be protected as a refugee. And when you've been protected as a refugee, that is the one step.
Mm-hmm.
The second step will be resettlement. That is another step. For you to be to be resettled in a third country, you need to have another thing that will qualify you to settle in a third country.
Two stages.
Yes. So people, they don't know about it.
Yeah, they don't.
What they do know, just the people are coming here and all those
because
stuff.
They said, as you highlighted, you know, you have been a refugee camp, and then these people say we need refugees, and then they bring you on board, and then you come to New Zealand. But it definitely is not. It's not the case.
And then in the resettlement, there is other criteria, which is the resettled state, which is around the world. Each country have a different criteria to accept refugees.
That's right.
For example, New Zealand, we have three categories, which is a lineup was UNHCR.
Mm-hmm.
We have emergency cases and medical attention. That is one criteria. The second one, women at risk.
Okay.
And the third one is emergency case, which is I fit to that category where I come to New Zealand. Because my
based on your history.
Yes, based on my situation in Syria, because legally I'm not allowed to stay in Syria after when I get protected. So UNHCR, they try to locate me to any country as soon as possible.
On emergency basis.
In emergency basis. So I was lucky then to went to New Zealand selection mission going to Syria to assist some of the former reunification from Iraq to come to New Zealand. So I went there, and this was a struggle as well for me to be put forward to New Zealand. And I went to the UNHCR office in Damascus, and I have my own approach, and I told them that you guys... It's not really fear. I need to have some of the answer. Otherwise, myself and my family, we're gonna go back to prison again.
Mm.
And one of the lawyers, he was a new lawyer, but he come and tell me, "Aban, look, I will do my best and see how the things work." And when they mention about New Zealand, I say, "Fuck." And they look at me. She said, "What do you try to communicate?" And I said, "New Zealand."
Yeah, but did you have an idea what the New Zealand what New Zealand is?
Oh my God, I have idea in New Zealand when I were in
high school.
No, not high school. Intermediate exam, you know, in Sudan. When want to go to high school, we
then
have
they give you this story.
National exam, and in geography, we have always every time the tiny island just close to Australia. Always the name of New Zealand comes. But it's come in the another sound of Arabic language, New Zealander.
Yeah,
and I said, okay, New Zealand, and then I just translated to Arabic, and I said New Zealand, okay. And then, and I said, okay, so what does New Zealand look like? And he said, oh, it's a good country. And according to your application, yes, you're looking for the place where you can get education. And I said, oh, really? And they said, yeah. But at the moment, we're not talking about New Zealand because you're not being selected yet.
Yeah.
So that's what I can refer you to. And she said, okay, you go and I will call you. And 3 days, 4 days, she called me. She said, "Aban, can you come to the office?" And I said, "By myself or with my wife?" She said, "Just come by yourself." And I went there.
Mm.
She said, "Already, I took your file. You're supposed to be sent to America. Your file was in America, delegation. They refer you there. But because of the new development of your stories, I took the case and now... We confirmed New Zealand delegate. They are coming to New Zealand to Syria to assist some of the family unification for Iraq. And I said, "Oh, this is good." And she said, "What I need from you is that now I am sending your application to New Zealand immigration. So it might take months.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be patient with me. If there is something happen with your situation, and the security or anyone come, just you call us and you give them your card and we will be able to assist you. After that, she called me after 1 month. They said, oh, New Zealand, they accept your application. And I said, oh, wonderful.
Wow.
And when I come to my wife and I told her, Mary, look, there is a lot of things happening.
New developments.
No, you're not telling the truth. And I said, okay. When we've been called for the pictures, you will see. And she said, no, we just been accepted 5 months ago. And now there are people staying in Syria for many years, 10 years and over. They never been resettled. And
she
said,
didn't know the histories are not the same.
Yeah, and I told her, look, everyone have his own stories.
Yeah.
But for me now, I'm in a danger of the security, and that what fit the criteria of UNHCR. I need to be really to resettle. And when we go, we meet the New Zealand mission selection, and we went there and we met with them, and this is where she believed me. And then went, the picture has been taken, and we come home and said, how you did this? And I said, our case done it, not me. And yeah, so it's not not an easy thing. We people understand, oh, those refugees that come to this country, oh, those this, but they don't know behind all those things.
Yeah.
And for you to come to New Zealand is not an easy thing as well. There is a lot of things need to be identified about you and all those stuff. So, and I was pleased to come to New Zealand because, reflecting back on my 11 years going to 12 years right now, I think this is what I was, I'm looking for. And sometime, God give you what you ask in a different way. And for me, I was reflecting by saying unknown the place where the God just direct me and be here. So I'm pleased to be in this country, and that's why I want to give back
to the
our building in New Zealand to say I can offer some things. And the space which is we are operating in now as an ARCC, this is one of the New Zealand values. We need to bring it to the light to say this is our value by giving people the right and using the right language. So it's very important.
Maybe yesterday we were in a maritime museum. It was a transfer of what took place in Waiake Island and then to Maritime Museum. And Maritime Museum is doing it differently the way it was done in Waiake Island. It's the same thing, but different style. And, it's a different stage. We are in a different stage. And yesterday you gave a very powerful message. I think everybody was so happy about it. And I like the line when you say, our stories, this is us. You know, this is us. We don't want to be somebody else. This is us. And this is the way we introduce yourself. You know, when you meet new people, you introduce yourself. This is our introduction. We are telling our New Zealanders the rest of them because we want to be a part of them. And this is our stories. These are our stories. This is how far we have come. And I like the distinction you put between the journey and the refuge. You seal it by saying we have already found the refuge, because to me, you put it in a better way, though, because the UNHCR found, I think, sealed the journey, and then journey took another stage. And then here we found the refuge. But life, another life beyond that refuge is what is going on, which is in the resettlement sector, because you don't come here and resettle at the same time. Just integration is a process. So it was a great message that you gave. It was very powerful. So what would be different, what was in Waiake Island now would make a difference in Maritime Museum?
Okay, to answer that question, I think it's important to acknowledge the partners, which is ARCC, work with them. Coming from Waiake Island to Maritime Museum, I think is a very, very, very important stage. First of all, I would like to acknowledge Maritime Museum for welcoming ARCC and hard work, which was Tiffany. The opening of the exhibition last night, I think it gave me the opportunity that to know more audience. And for me, being a part of the opening speakers, I was pleased to really to highlight what is not normal to some people within the audience last night. I think, excuse me. Sometimes the reality need to be told, because, as I said, this is the way we need to introduce ourselves to New Zealand. First of all, we have something to offer. Firstly, which is introduction, and our introduction to New Zealand society, it come in different way, but the way how ARCC is step forward to collect those stories, I think is the way how we should do for many years. So I put it in a way that it's important when you come to someone, for example, you come to someone a house and they don't know you, you will be in a position to explain yourself.
Yeah.
And this is the situation all the newcomers and resettled community that are in. And also we need to distinguish between different journeys. And the journey we are in now is a resettlement journey, which is already after when we find the refuge in our new home, we need to make sure, because we thought no problem at all, we will be able to settle well, but in the reality we face that there is a lot of a challenge to
on the way of resettlement.
Yeah, to resettle and integrate to the society which you want to be part of them.
Yeah.
But now we have a two-way in regard to your question by saying what difference going to be between Waiheke Island and Maritime Museum. The step we are taking in Maritime Museum, we have two things. ARCC, we are promoting our storybook, Beyond Refuge, Stories of the Resettlement in Auckland. That one is, which is has been translated to audio, which is displayed in Waiheke Island. Also, it's going to be displayed here, but it's another step where we also we will display for those who have their stories, their pictures are going to be displayed in the wall. And we add also a New Zealander now, From Refugees to Kiwis, which is the photograph book we designed where the people will see the way how the label has been put to the people, which is they don't know about it. So we took that one of the communication areas as well, how the language can be changed.
Yeah, because one of the people who were there said she saw the New Zealander now. I think she went through the pictures and all of that, and she said these are very powerful images. And I say to her, this is another way of saying, here, this is how far we come. You know, there are not a lot of messages in there, but there's a few quotes, but these quotes tell a lot, part of the image. You say, this is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, that is where going to add the value of what we've done in Waiheke Island. And also, as you are aware, we are rolling out as well the second exhibition of New Zealander Now, and also the Beyond Refuge storybook as well. We are collecting that. The display we're going to have in Maritime Museum is going to be a unique way. And also we encourage all the Aucklanders who really have time, because this program's opened last night and he will be there until the 3rd of September. We encourage all the Aucklanders to visit, and I'm sure they will get out value of their visit to the Maritime Museum, especially the section of ARCC and Tiffany and the work already we've been put in place there. The New Zealander Now, the picture is going to be displayed there, and also the audio going to be displayed there, and There is a lot of shape. Also, there is a
I saw a different thing. I think it's a new one in Maritime Museum, where you record a little bit of history, like 10 minutes recording, and then on the wall there's a
that will show where you come from.
Yeah, it will show from the map.
The map will show you where you come from.
This is amazing.
Yeah, when you say your name, for example, I come from America. Already, automatically the audio will translate it to the map, and then it will locate America, and then whatever you said, and how long took you to come to New Zealand, it will show you until when you reach New Zealand.
It was really great.
So, really, I do really encourage our listeners to make sure that they want to experience something different in a way that they never experienced before. I do invite you to come to Moratai Museum and see. And also we will have holiday programs in a different way so that you will see how the newcomers and resettled communities role in our society and see our contribution. There is other stuff as well I can say. For Auckland, the good news is for Aucklanders, you are free to enter to the museum. At least you need to provide your library card to identify you are Aucklanders. And if you don't have a library card, you can bring
a letter
confirm your address to allow you to enter there. Just the simple stuff. But last night for me, when I was starting my speech, I think it was very important because the previous speaker gave me a little bit of highlight when I say my name Emmanuel and my name is awesome, because that is the theme of last night. And also for me to open the floor was the Maori speech as well.
It added a lot of value.
And that is really part of newcomers and resettled community identity as well. What is important is just to acknowledge ourselves and be just human. And the reflection from the audience last night is really not just empower me, but it give me the sense that and confirm to me that what we doing at AICC is not a simple thing, it's a big thing. And especially the mature after when I finished my speech and he came toward me and we have a hungry of Maori together, I think
that was powerful.
And he told me really word which is I never heard it before, and that is a blessing for me last night. And I was overwhelming with other people when they come to me and they said, you were in a stage there and you talking and you don't have any speech in your hand you can see and refer to. How this come from? And I said, just it's in nature. And she said, okay, I think what we should do, we send you to America so that you can give a speech to Trump. And I said, oh.
Here you come.
And I said, oh, that's going to be a big, no. I'm telling you the truth. You should go and tell him. And I said, just let us do our business in our house and see how we can reflect to other people in another world. So for me, last night was really an amazing night. And also, I do need to acknowledge AICC staff and volunteers who were behind me last night as well. I think it's I didn't do it myself, but we done it, all of us. Because
and the way you did it was very amazing. One woman walked up to me and she said, you know, your boss introduced you people to New Zealand. And so I was so, it's not the way I come in, the way I will walk out. There is a difference. So how can I help in this? I said, all we want New Zealanders to be part of us, because we are part of New Zealand, as Aban said in the speech. And so a lot of joy on the floor, and people interact, and what can be done on that. And please, if you are listening and you want help in this, there are so many ways you can help it's not only the term of contributing the dollar, but also in human capacity, you can help in many ways. We have Youth Voice United. It's undergoing thing. It's a new thing, but, you know, we have a lot of youth there. We have a lot of programs. We have a lot of projects running. If you want help, just give us a call, and then we will talk. 846-0111, right?
It's 09846 0110.
0110. Just give us a call, and then if you want to help.
Yeah, also to acknowledge last night, all those two projects, which is AICC, two major projects, which is really reflect the positivity of what we do, it has been done in a voluntary work. Naldo, the photographer, is involved with AICC entirely voluntarily, you know. And also for yourself, Galwag, when you start doing this, the storybook, you're writing all those stories in a capacity of the voluntary work. And many people, they don't know that all those achievements has come through the voluntary work. And as you said, voluntary work doesn't mean that you need to give money.
Yeah.
But we in AICC, we're trying to get whatever you can offer. There is a place there. And also there are some people, last night they asked me about how we can be part of AICC. And I said, AICC currently is looking for ambassadors in the community there.
Yeah.
You can be a youth ambassador, you can be ambassadors, AICC ambassadors. It doesn't matter age, it doesn't matter whatever you think of. AICC is a diverse organization, and it's not just only people with a refugees background. We have in our board is just a mix
of different countries.
Yeah. Because our vision is that to ensure all the newcomers and resettled community, they're having a better resettlement and integration. So to have better resettlement and integration, that's come in a two-way.
Yeah.
And that is very important. And one of the channel of communication as well we have, where we encourage our community to be part of the resettlement resettled radio.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the channel of communication, and we try to encourage our community to be part of resettled radio, whereby they come and tell their story. What's happening in the community there? It's not about a politic, but what's happening in the community there might be a matter to someone who's in our local neighbors or in our NGOs or government people who can be able to give a hand to support in a way that how we overcome our challenge. But for us, we take a positive approach to ensure that our contribution to our beauty, New Zealand, and especially in Auckland region, are taken seriously and in consideration that our contribution is visible, and that is what I can say.
And what makes AICC a beautiful organization is the fact that it comes from different diversity. The diversity is so huge, almost about 18 to 19 different incorporate societies. You can name it from Middle East, from Africa, from, you know, Southeast Asia, all of them, all of these people. You know, they come together and discuss how they can move forward. And this is a challenge, but they cannot do it alone, you know.
And that's what I mentioned last night. Look, we have been given opportunity or the platform how we can structure our new life. But up to us how we can do that, because there is opportunity there. And sometimes many people, they might point their fingers by saying, oh, government need to do this, government need to do this. Believe you or not, our government will not do something by themselves. They need a community behind them, because we know as a community our issues, and we know the solution for our issues. So the government need the community working together, and that's way we will be able to overcome our challenge.
Yeah.
Let us do our homework phase. After that, we go and ask for help.
Yeah.
And that is approach is very important. And I refer always saying, help yourself first, and then you will find someone else to come and help you. And that is very important. And what I ensure last night by saying, I know there's a lot of generous New Zealanders outside there, they don't know the work we do.
Yeah.
And if they hear this, they're going to be part of it. And I believe that, and I know there are many people outside there that want to help. But for our community also, I do encourage them, the opportunity will not wait for you.
Yeah.
You need to search for it.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the thing that we need to step in that space. And for me, just being a practical person, I think in my way of working in the resettlement sector, I learn a lot of things, and I get benefit from that learning.
Yeah, we are all learning.
Yeah, so that's the kind of the thing we encourage ourselves. And it's not easy for me just to give up on something, which is I put my attention to it. Yeah. So that's what has happened.
That's a change. Change takes a lot of courage and energy.
Yeah, that need the individual who will take risk and be in that space and make the change.
Yeah, the change we all desire.
Yeah,
we came a long way. We came a long way, and still we move forward.
Yeah.
So, like we say before, if you need help with anything, it's not the dollar that matters, but a lot of things are going on. You can help in many ways. We are writing the stories. You are collecting the stories. Part two of Beyond Refuge is coming up. And if you want to be a part of this, you can be a proofreader, you can review it, you can collect the stories in different ways, you know. We go to the communities, we collect the stories. They want their stories to be told, but in which way? That's why we came up with Beyond the Refuge, the stories of the resettlement in Oakland. Amazing people out there. So please, we need a team. If you are listening and you want help, come in, come on board. We are a big family from all over the world. You know, and Urban has a team that if you come to us, we will not let you go.
Yeah, right? It's simple, because being a part of the family is not easy.
Yeah.
But to lose a member of the family, it's not the ideal thing for us. If you become part of our family, that's it.
Yeah.
We're going to be...
In ICC, we say you come in as a visitor, you go as a funnel. You become part of us. So thanks for listening. That's Ban Yo, the general manager of ARCC. Thank you. This is Galwak from Resettlement Radio, brought to you by Planet FM. We have a music. After that, we will go and play to you the second part of Ibrahim Ali. Ibrahim Ali had a conversation with me on what has taken place in their community, in the Somali community. They had a victory that they were celebrating. ARCC was part of that. We attended it, and it is a joyous movement for the Somali community. They have a new leader to lead them. So that's the second part of his conversation with us, and it will be played after this track.
Never got love from a
So the problem is if the camp is shut down, it's not only for Somali, even South Sudanese. I used to live there. Even now, there are a lot of South Sudanese. Where will they go? South Sudan has a civil war by itself.
Yeah.
So it will not affect on the South Sudan.
Even the innocent Somalians who are not the terrorists, who are there just to live for life. So, like, it will affect anyone. The innocent people, mostly are innocent. The Al-Shabaab is we're talking about, I'm not sure if it's true, but if what the government of Kenya say, if what the government is saying, Kenya is saying is true, what would be the number of the Al-Shabaab is recruiting or organizing themselves in the camps? I think the number is too small. So I think then the government of Kenya should be smart, and I'm not sure, but what I heard was like the Kenyan militaries are in Somalia, and some of the people are not happy the interference of Kenyan to Somalia. What the Kenyan soldiers are doing in Somalia? That is, and Kenya has its own interest. Kenya even tried to take some land, some part of Somalia. And there are two or more regions belong to Somalia that Kenya already took unknowingly. I don't know the reason. There are so many reasons of why the tension between the Somalis and the Kenyans. Mm. And it is because of the corruption and what so many stuff is happening there. But what I would say, the refugees, as you mentioned, are in crisis. They came there for a reason. They were looking for a life, for a shelter, for somewhere peace, somewhere they can, you know, sleep at the night. And that was the reason they came to the camps. And Kenya does not pay anything to these people. No. You know, the UNHCR and the other UN agencies or NGOs are the one who is helping those people in the camps. I think not even the people of the Kenyans are against the closure of the camps. The UNHCR is against. Amnesty International was also spoken and say this is not fair, you know, because when they say like we're deporting these people, where are they deporting to? Somalia is to Mogadishu. To Mogadishu, you know, so many explosions.
They will be given to the new man, Farmajo. Farmajo will be in charge. That's not good.
What I'm saying is that still the Somali is not secure. There is no way these people can go back. You know, they because like when we take someone from somewhere safe and you put them in Dancha, give them to Al-Shabaab, Al-Shabaab will kill them. Yeah. Yeah, and some people, they run away because of the tribalism, as I mentioned before.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention, maybe because some of these people, 580,000, there must be, some of them must be political refugees under political protection, and politician being protected, and now being deported against your own wish. I don't know how it's going to go, but from the side of Kenya, I don't know whether there are any measures being put in place, but the United Nations, as you said before, does not like the idea. Do not agree with the idea of deportation. But the Kenyan government says, we will deport them. The court says no. That's a forceful deportation. Mm. So it's against the Geneva Convention, and it's against the Convention of Organization of African Union that was signed in the 60s. And now we are coming saying you're going to deport 580,000 refugees. No, it's not like that. So now it's between the Kenyan court and the Kenyan government. Yeah. So we don't know what would be the next one. Yeah. Because they say they will appeal it. They say we will not stop the fight. In fact, Kenya with refugees is a big issue. They don't get along well. Yeah, they don't get along well. It did not start with the Somali refugees. It started with the South Sudanese. They say they're going to close down Kakuma. And then the UN was saying, okay, if you're going to close down Kakuma, maybe we will find a way where these people should be taken to. They are not going to South Sudan. South Sudan has a civil war. They will be taken either to Ethiopia or Uganda. Because these countries are saying, okay, if Kenya does not want South Sudanese refugees, bring them. We're going to accommodate them. Yeah, and then if Kenya saw that, you know, it would be in trouble in the United Nations, and they were looking for the chairmanship of African Union. so they cooled. Yeah, they cooled down a little bit, and finally they did not get the African Union chairmanship that they were looking for.
Yeah,
because of, you know, they were quoted half. They have the impact of that, and they pull out the UN troops from South Sudan, in African peace mission. Yeah, things like that. Yeah. So now, this guy, we don't know what he's going to do. The new president of Somalia, whether he will have a plan for the refugees or not.
At the moment, still the inauguration did not take place. I think on 22nd February, the inauguration will take place. So after that, I think, you know, any system that's going to work needed some sort of transition now and a period of time to work. So, as we mentioned, like the expectation is we expect many things from this new president. And hopefully, maybe at the end of the day, he will bring back those refugees home. And he will accommodate, you know, their life, you know, for them also to transit to their betterment of living in Somalia. You know, even some of the refugees in Kenya, they born in there. Yeah. They born in the refugee camp. I heard like someone who born in the refugee camp also graduated in the refugee camp because there are some schooling stuff happening there. And some of them even they went to Oxford and you know, yeah.
From refugee camp to Oxford
University. They've been accepted because of, you know, how they their efforts. You know, some people are very smart. So we hope, like, there will be a way for those refugees in the crisis. But it needs a time. If the government of Kenya not give a time to the new president and even the Somalia themselves to settle down, it will be hard. they put in a difficult, the life of these people into a difficult situation. So let him just, you know, start working. Let him try to even get his cabinet, because what we also were asking, the questions we were asking ourselves was, will he get the right people within the government? Yeah, because he's a new president and he needs a good brain minister, a good team anyway. But the brain minister will get this, you know, the other staff to the work, into the government. But first he has to get the right prime minister, yeah, to work with him. Yeah. And then the other right team. I hope the Parliament of Somalia are now in a good position, because they are the one who vote for him. We need a change from any, you know, anywhere. So I would say, like, both, even those are in the refugees and the president, they need a time. If the government of Kenya does not give them a time, they need to be a problem. So the Kenyan government should consider the neighboring, they should consider the humanity. I appreciate, you know, we appreciate and we thank it, the Kenyan government, because they are the one who welcomed the refugees initially in 1990s till now. They've been patient. But we need more extra time for these refugees and to get a time, and also the new administration of Somalia also need a time. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Let's hope for the best. I hope we will get the best people to help him in that transition, because deporting all these people, it's not an easy thing. I think the Kenya government also has no plan, because they're thinking about just deporting this huge number. They don't know how.
You know, they don't know how.
They don't know how. They not think about the cost. Because it's not the United Nations that will take back. Yeah, because if you say you don't want the refugees, so you have to think of ways to take them back. Yeah. So you are a member of the United Nations. And then you say you don't want the refugees that belong to the United Nations. And, you know, you have to find a way to take these people back. And I'm glad that the court came out with a statement, the Kenya Supreme Court, saying, you know, deportation of the Somali refugees living in Kenya as refugees will be against the 1951 Geneva Convention and the 1969 Organizations of African Union Convention to provide protection to refugees. So once you are taking them back where they came from, no protection.
I remember there was three different meetings about that. There has been, I remember, like, three ways of dialogue between the UNHCR, the United Nations, and the government of Kenya, and also the transitional government of Somalia. So what happened was, like, they were talking about, one Kenya suggested, like, they wanted to deport. There was a note from UN and other IGAD, the African Union, and all those, you know, governments, other stakeholders. So what I remember was that they agreed, if in case some of the refugees wanted to go back to Somalia, then it has to be their choice. You don't have to push them. You don't have to force them to go back. Do not deport forcefully, but it has to be a choice. If someone wants to go back to their country, if a South Sudanese wants to go back to their South Sudanese country, then let them.
Yeah, if they choose to do so.
Yeah, if they choose to do so. But if they don't choose and wanted to live here, and they think that if they go back, they will be in danger, then why are you forcing them? So the government of Kenya should be smart in this case.
That was our show for this week.
Take care until next Saturday, same time, 10 to 5, on Planet FM 104.6.
And on the web, www.plantaudio.org.nz/resetteredradio.